Tastemakers Talks, a podcast discussing how to break into the fashion industry, a place where we champion the Irish voice and inspire the next generation. My name is Tori Cassidy. I'm the founder and editor of Tastemakers, and I'll be your host. In this episode, we chat to one of Ireland's leading stylists, Courtney Smith. We discuss how she got her first big break in London and ended up styling celebrities like Amy Winehouse and Alicia Dixon, to how she then scored some of her biggest clients like Louis Vuitton. Keep on listening to find out how she broke into the fashion industry.
What was your first ever job then, besides fashion?
Oh, God. My first, I think it was cocktail waitress. I was a cocktail waitress in a local hotel here. I wasn't very good at it. But my parents were great. They always kind of instilled in me, if I wanted something, I'd pay for it myself, which made me, from a very young age, get part-time jobs. Like, I started babysitting really young, but, like, I would babysit for the whole summer, like, during the day, almost like a nanny type job. And then once I kind of grown past that, I got the cocktail waitressing job. And then after that, I did start working in fashion retail quite young. I think my first gig, I was 16, and it was like a summer job, and I was working for my dad's friend who had his own suit company in like a tiny shop in Donaghadee Shopping Centre. And yeah. I started working for him just like assisting. And my second week on the job, the manager got fired, and it was only me and her, and your man was on holidays. So I ended up becoming like the manager at age 16, opening up the shop every day, merchandising, everything. But it was really great kind of taste. And like freedom, I suppose. So I was like dressing the mannequins and trying to come up with kind of creative ways to get people in the door and things like that. So that was kind of like probably my first taste of that kind of gig. I always knew I wanted to work in fashion, but I didn't really know what role. I studied fashion design first. I always wanted to be a fashion designer. And I think it was actually one of my tutors that kind of said to me, I think you prefer the finished product. Like, I think, because honestly, like every time I'd make an outfit or an item or a collection, I'd do a photo shoot with my friends. I'd just get all my friends together. With my shitty camera, I'd do their hair and makeup, and I'd then come in the next day and I'd show everybody my photo shoot. And my tutor's like, nobody else here does that. Their finished product is the garment. You keep coming afterwards, like a week later, with these photo shoots saying this is the finished product because this is how I'm showing the garment. And so it was her that kind of recognized in me styling as a career, and I had never even considered that. So after she had said that to me, I then looked at London College Fashion, and at the time they had a course which I don't think exists anymore, but it was like a postgrad, and it was called Fashion Media. And within it, you could take different modules. And I did fashion photography, fashion styling, and fashion journalism. And then in your final kind of season or whatever it's called, you just kind of focus on one of them. And I focused on styling. So that was kind of, but I had been working in retail at that point throughout college when I was in fashion design, which I went to Sally Noggin in Dublin. And I worked in Topshop and I worked in All Saints, and I was very much working with, my favorite part of it was when I got to be on the floor helping people and giving them advice, like styling. And then when I finished in London College Fashion, I stayed on in London for another 6 months, and I worked for a boutique called Arrogant Cat. Doesn't exist anymore. But they were one of those boutiques at the time that was like really well known within like the celebrity circle. So like we used to dress Girls Aloud, and we had Victoria Beckham in, like every week there was another celebrity in. So I was hired as their celebrity stylist. So that was kind of like, that was my role. Now, weirdly enough, I ended up being the manager there as well, because the manager got fired like a month into working there. So I was kind of like manager, as in I'd have to do all their schedules and payroll and all that. Because I'd done it before, I kind of knew what I was doing. But then on the flip side of that, I wasn't really a shop assistant. I was the one liaising with all the celebrities, styling them. So that was actually my first proper stylist's job, because like I styled Amy Winehouse for her at that season. She was doing she was like huge, but she was doing her kind of festival circuit that summer. So she did like Oxygen in Dublin, and she was doing all the big ones in London. So I styled her for that. I styled Alicia Dixon for a couple of appearances. We had Sarah Harding in from Girls Aloud. So for me, that was kind of like, okay, I'm a stylist now. And when I moved back to Dublin then, because I ran out of money, because it was just, it's like, you know yourself, London's so expensive. And I'd gotten through college. I actually worked as a cocktail waitress again while I was in London College of Fashion. But it was really hard because like I was working late night shifts and then I was going to college. And then I was working weekends and I was going to college. So I don't think I put my full self into college. Like I think I probably could have done a lot better. Like, I mean, I passed and all that, but I feel like I don't think I had the full college experience. You know what I mean? Like I literally was working college. And then like the work that I was doing, it was like in one of those like West End clubs, serving people champagne kind of thing. So I was kind of like caught up in that as well. And so when I came home, because I ran out of money, I had set it up in my head. I was like, I want to be a celebrity stylist. Not really realizing that career doesn't really work in Ireland. We don't have that level of clientele. Mm-hmm. Like there's very few celebrities here that have a stylist. Yeah. Amy Huberman's probably one of the only ones. And even at that, her stylist is her best friend. So I think it's more of a like relationship kind of thing. So I was writing off to places like TV3 and RTE, and I was trying to become an in-house stylist there. And same with the magazines, not really realizing that most of the magazines use freelance artists. And I set up like a really shit website for like 50 euro and just put up my pictures at Amy Winehouse and people that I'd styled in the UK. And then I did a couple of shoots as well, freelance. And about 6 months later, I got an email back from TV3 and they were like, okay, so we don't actually, like our celebrities or our presenters style themselves. We don't have a wardrobe department, which I was like, oh, okay. Like I wasn't aware of that. But they were like, but we do have an opening on our morning show, Ireland AM. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but we're looking for new talent. And when I was in London, part of what was on my CV was that I'd been on Gox Fashion Fix, because do you remember that show? Gox Fashion Fix. He had come into the boutique that I was the stylist in. So I did like a little appearance with him. He used to do this thing called like the hot item of the week or the must-have item of the week or something. So I had done that a couple of times with him where I was like, this is the must-have piece of the week. So I've been on screen. So they were like, look, you've been on screen. Have you done live TV? Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, no, I've never done live TV. And but it was a long story. But basically, I had a meeting with them on the phone and they, like, that all went really well. I sent them the mood board, that went really well. And on my way in to do my final production meeting and kind of screen test, they phoned me and say, look, we have to cancel it. We're really sorry. But any chance you can be here tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. with two models and six outfits. And I was 21. I'd never been on live TV. So I just was like, yeah, no problem. That's totally fine. And then I hung up the phone and I was like, So that was definitely the turning point for the beginning of my career.
It just seems like it just went from 0 to 100 really quick. Like
when I tell the story, it does sound like that. But it was kind of like, I had 6 months where I was like on the dole trying to, I was actually on a thing called, that had just been introduced at the time by the government, which is called Back to Work Allowance, which is the same as the dole, but they're basically trying to encourage people to set up their own business. And at the time I knew I wanted to be a stylist and I was like, I'm going to launch myself as a stylist. So it was, I think, slightly less than the dole, but it was like, the encouragement was that you were to set up your own business. So I was on that for 6 months and I didn't get one job. So I'm literally sitting in my parents' house every day, all day, just emailing. So like 6 months can be a really long time of that. So while to other people, I suppose when I tell the story, I know it sounds like it literally was like, whoa, because like all of a sudden I was on live TV and they gave me a regular slot. I was on every week. So it did. Once I had that, it was quite quick. It did spitball, I feel, quite quickly. But I think to get there, there was that slog of the 6 months trying.
Yeah. Interesting to know if we just, like, backtrack a bit. I know you said when you left London College of Fashion, you started working in this boutique, which put you in contact with celebs, which is obviously such a great gig to get out of college. How did you get that? Did you email them? Was there a job board?
It was on one of the job boards. It was actually advertised as like a retail assistant. And at the time I just wanted to stay in London. But when I met with them, I had obviously done my research and I was like, I know that you have a lot of people coming in. I was like, do you have like a liaison with them? Like just somebody, is there someone specific? And they're like, oh no, we just have to do their own thing. And I was like, okay, well, can I suggest that, like, maybe that's something that I could do? Like, if I was like, what we could be doing is upselling, because I was like, these people are coming in and maybe buying a piece, but if you told them they've got to dedicate, because where I was based was like the flagship store, and it was beautiful. It was on Great Portland Street. And I was like, we could close the doors for them. We could get them to come in after hours, or we could give them like a dedicated space, or, you know what I mean? I was like, this is what these people want. And I was like, and also if we do it this way, we'll probably sell more. And therefore, if it's seen on them, we get more people in the door. So it's like, it's, you know, so I almost like, I gave them the idea to do it. And they were like, okay, well, you'll have to work as a retail assistant as well, but you will be this, because I was able to say, like, this is my background, this is what I've studied. So that's how that kind of that whole thing started. So, like, I mean, I only had like maybe a celebrity in a week, once a week. So it's not like, it's like the rest of the time I was just on the shop floor the way I normally would be. And then when the girl got fired, I was made manager, so I was more back of house. But then when a celebrity was booked in, I'd be literally me and them with them.
It's really interesting. So you had that initiative though to be like, okay, this is what we need to do.
Yeah, I never really thought about it like that. But yeah, I suppose I just saw something that they hadn't really capitalized on. They already had the clientele. They just weren't capitalizing on it. So, and I suppose for me, I wanted a little bit more from it as well. I wanted to show that I was progressing after college, not that I was, like, in my eyes, regressing by going back and working in retail after doing all, you know, studying fashion design, then studying fashion media in London College of Fashion. Like, I had bigger aspirations. So I probably saw it as a stepping stone. And probably subconsciously, I didn't go in with that as like my game plan, but I was just kind of like, why aren't you utilizing this? I was like, you know, I'm a stylist, so I can do this for you. And actually at the time I had been interviewing. So simultaneously I was interviewing for the role in Arrogant Cat, but I was also interviewing for the role as personal shopper in Topshop. And I got down to the final two in that. And at the time, like, that was like the most coveted job in the fashion sphere. It probably still is quite coveted, but like back then that was like a really big job. And I lost out to somebody who was way more experienced than me, that had been working in the industry like 6 years longer than me. So it made a lot of sense. But I think because they knew, I was quite honest with them when I was interviewing. I was like, look, I'm also up for personal shopper and Topshop. So they probably were kind of like, oh, okay. So maybe that kind of helped a little bit.
Yeah, so you obviously just really knew how to sell yourself. This is what I can do for you. I can help you along, rather than, oh, like, hi,
you need me more than I need you.
So I know obviously you said you made the jump to TV then, and then you had a couple of freelance jobs, but did you assist any stylists when you were first starting?
No, I didn't. I actually wanted to. I had messaged Aisling Farinella. And at this stage, I had done loads of test shoots, because obviously I met loads of photographers in college, in London College Fashion, and we used to like test at the weekends just with like my hot mates or people that we met in school or whatever. And I used to just use the clothes that I had in my wardrobe. And then when I got the job in Arrogant Cat, I asked permission, but I used to bring clothes home and do little photo shoots and things like that. And then sometimes, like, do you remember that girl from Angus Thongs and Perfect Snogging? Do you remember that movie? So I was, I know, random, but I was asked to style her for a cover shoot for some small British magazine.
Through Arrogant Cat?
No, through, like, the photographer who was mates with her, who I'd gone to college with. It was all quite random.
Yeah.
But, so I ended up doing that, and I dressed her in all Arrogant Cat clothing, because obviously I was working there, and they were delighted because they were getting the coverage, but also I was delighted because I was getting my first print magazine. And so I kind of, basically, I had a portfolio. Now, most of them were just test shoots, but then I had that little tear. And I met with Aisling Farinella, who was looking for an assistant at the time. Mm-hmm. And I went and met with her, and she went through my book with me, and she's like, you don't need to assist. She's like, I'll be honest. She's like, you need to take some of these shots out. Like, she's like, some of them are great, and some of them are progressive, and some of them just, she was like, take these ones out, basically. And she's like, I think you're already a stylist. You just need to go out and start marketing yourself. She's like, you'll learn things from me. Like, of course you'll learn things, but she's like, you'll probably just learn them on the ground on your own. She's like, I just don't think, she's like, you're far past what I need from an assistant or what you need from me. So I was like, I was actually really bummed. I was really upset because I really wanted to assist her. But I have since thanked her because I think, like, had she not said that, I don't know what I'd be doing right now, because I really think I did learn on the ground. Like, I made loads of mistakes. I don't really like any of the shoots that I did for the first maybe 4 to 5 years of my career. I look back and I'm like, oh, cringe. But also, they were of a certain time, so the style that was around back then was so different. Like, the makeup was so extra, the hair, like, everything was like big hair, big makeup. Like, we did swimwear shoots with high heels, which, like, which has never happened now. But I feel like I learned all those on the job. I made all my mistakes on the job, and I feel like I'm a better stylist for it. So I never assisted. I did want to, but I never did. And I do feel like you learn a lot from assisting. And I have had assistants that have gone on to do amazing things, and they're always so good and really thankful to me. Like, which, like, I'm not gonna, like, you know, they've all done their own thing. But, like, one of them then worked for Vogue. Like one has his own fashion line now. The other one's the fashion editor of her.ie. Like, the other one is the fashion editor of Stellar now, which I did the intro to get her the job because she'd spent so much time with me. And I was like, this girl's so talented, you need to hire her. So I do think there's massive credit and learning ability when you assist somebody. But then at the same time, weirdly, I feel like it worked well for me not assisting, because the industry here is so, so tiny that maybe not so much anymore, but there was a bit of a bitchier element when I started out. And I feel like, I don't think there is anymore. I think there's a really nice camaraderie with stylists, but I do feel like if I'd assisted somebody and then I went after their clients, because there was less clients back then as well, in terms of, like, commercial clients, I feel like there would have been a little bit like stepping on toes. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I feel like because I never assisted anybody, I went after every client because I don't owe you anything. So if I, you know, if I want to get Brand Compass, if I want to get Arnott's, if I want to get that tiny cashmere company, I'm going to go for all of them because, like, I don't know you. Like, I respect you as a stylist, but this is business is business. Yeah. Whereas I feel like even my old assistant, Megan, she went for a job with Kildare Village. And she knew that I used to work with Kildare Village, and she phoned me and she asked permission. And, like, which I thought was such a lovely thing to do. And I was like, absolutely. I was like, I don't work with them, but, like, anymore. But, like, I was like, but I thank you for giving me the heads up, and you should go for that. That's a really good job for you to get. But, like, that's what I mean by the industry changing. I feel like there's a much nicer camaraderie with all the stylists. Whereas I feel like 10 years ago, it was probably a little bit more like, how dare she go for my client.
I know you said that Aisling was saying to you that you're really great, like, you should market yourself, which is obviously so lovely of her to say, because she could have really been like, okay, this girl is great, like, let her help me rather than help yourself. But
yeah,
how did you market yourself then?
So I set up the website, like I said, for like 50 euro. See, back then there was no social media. So there was no Twitter, there was no Instagram, there was barely Facebook. Facebook had been around, like, what, maybe 4 years at that point, but I don't think it had been capitalized in a business realm yet. I think it was still very much the personal pages. Mm-hmm. So I set up my website, which was my pictures with, like, my Amy Winehouse and things like that, and I put my shoots up. And other than that, it was cold calling. It was like old school cold calling, cold emailing, trying to just get, like, knocking on every door, trying to get as many meetings as I could possibly get. When I eventually started getting invited, because, see, the TV thing for me, I think, sped the process up, because I was able to then go to fashion shows that I wouldn't have been invited. Like, I feel like when you're a startup stylist now, it's so much harder to get an invite to like the Brian Thomas fashion show and the Arnott's fashion show, because if you're not established, if you're not shooting for a magazine or already print worthy or working for a commercial client, they're not going to invite you. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like comes 360, because, like, if you're not getting invited to those shows, how do you get the jobs and that kind of thing? So I felt like the TV thing introduced me then to my commercial clients. It introduced me, because I was writing to brands going, hi, I'm Courtney Smith, I work on Ireland AM, I do fashion segments, are you interested in doing a fashion segment? And then what I do is I if I got them on board for a fashion segment, I'd then be able to kind of, that door was open straight away to have a meeting with them. And I was like, do you need to shoot? Because I feel like your imagery is not, and it would be that kind of, almost like the way I did with Arrogant Cat. Mm-hmm. It would be like, I could kind of go in and chat to them and I'd be like, do you know what? I don't think you're marketing yourself very well. So I feel a fashion stylist is a fashion PR as well. Because it's my job to know how they're marketing themselves. Because if they're not marketing themselves correctly, that's where I come in. I'm like, this is how you should be like putting yourselves out there. Here's a shoot idea. So for me, the TV thing definitely opened up doors because I was able to go to the fashion shows. I was able to meet the fashion editors at the fashion shows, which was opening doors for me for getting magazine shoots. Mm-hmm. And then, or even just the potential to get a magazine shoot. Like I was getting, I would email the editors in advance of the fashion show and I'm like, hi, so the Brain Palmas fashion show is next week. I'll see you there. Any chance we can grab a coffee afterwards? And they're not like, for the most part, they're not going to be like, oh God, it's going to be so awkward to see her and pretend that I can't go for a coffee because we're going to be at the same event. So I'd get their meetings that way. And then with the commercial clients, it was usually through my TV slots. And I mean, like, sorry, it might only work one times out of 10, but that was like one big client. And I think my first big commercial client was Pamela Scott, which was like such a huge brand nationwide. And I used to shoot all of their commercial campaigns for the first like maybe 4 years of my career. And that was like a really, really big deal because they would have worked with like the top stylist in Ireland at the time. So that, and because they were a retainer, they came back to me every season. So I'd never had like a retainer client before. So it definitely started everything off.
It's really interesting. So Ireland AM obviously gave you that weight to be like, this is, I'm established, like I can definitely do
it. Yeah.
But it obviously seems like that you've definitely had the initiative to use that way and say, oh, but this is what I can help you with. So like for clients that are, or sorry, stylists that are starting out younger, how would you recommend to them that they optimize like networking opportunities? Because I know a lot of people probably would feel a bit nervous or think that people don't want them to come up to them, but really actually everybody is willing to help.
Yeah, I would say the first thing is never expect something from somebody without offering them something first. So I always say to young stylists, if there's a brand that you want to work with, why don't you use them in one of your shoots first? Even if it's just a shoot that you're putting on your social media because you don't have a printout yet, show them that you want to work with their brand. So if you're doing a test shoot and you'd love to down the line do a campaign shoot for Dunn Stores, feature a piece of Savita, tag Savita in that post. Show them that like you're a fan of the brand because then you're on their radar straight away. And then when you're emailing them to kind of look for a meeting to potentially get a job gig with them, it's kind of like, hi, I'm a big fan of the brand. I've been using your products in my own shoots. I'd love to meet up and chat about some potential work in the future. Or even I'd love to just meet up with you and see your new season collection so I can consider using it for a future shoot. So you're offering them something. You're not asking for something. And then when you've kind of developed that relationship, it can move on from that. So it was kind of like the TV thing, three thing for me. Mm-hmm. Although like I was kind of reaching out and going, I do Ireland AM. Like Ireland AM, it still is, but back then it was like, if I did a piece, no joke, because it was live TV, I would do a segment and let's say it was all Pennies. I would walk into Pennies and I would see people running in the door, like grabbing stuff off the rails. They would sell out like that, anything that went on TV. It was absolutely crazy. And that power is huge because then you're like able to kind of turn around the brand and go, look, I'm selling stuff. Mm-hmm. Like clearing out rails and rails of clothes. It's like, let me show you what else I can do. So they don't feel like they owe you, but they feel like they probably owe you the time. Mm. Or at least the pitch. And you develop a relationship as well. So I would always say do it that way. And again, like social media, it's not something that I had a tool to use back then. But if you can treat it like a marketing tool, that's the best way to use it. So for stylists, definitely put your shoots up on your page, tag the brands, let the brands know that you appreciate them and you like using them. And I think that's probably a really good place to start.
It's a really interesting piece of advice. You definitely think that social media is a really key thing for this kind of line of work?
I feel like it's like an instant website. If you can think about it like that, And I actually have two different accounts. I have my Courtney Smith fashion stylist account, which I just put my shoots up. And when I'm contacting model agencies to like book their models, I always send them that Instagram account because I like them to see the type of work that I create, because that depends on the type of model that they send you. Like, they'll send you a package of models, but like if they think your work is amazing, they'll send you the best models they have. So rather than sending them to my Courtney Smith style account, because that has a lot of me, like, mm-hmm. and it's, I kind of call that like my own personality account rather than my work account. Mm-hmm. And the reason being, because when I was doing TV, I used to get more questions about my personal style than I did about the stuff that I was putting up. So I kind of felt like I needed two totally separate accounts. But if you like, so the same for stylists, if you're an aspiring stylist, have your own personal account as your personal account, and then have your styling account as your styling account, and you put your work up there. So like, again, when I'm like approaching fashion brands, I'll always put my styling account as my Instagram account, because they do look at them, like they do. Yeah. When I'm booking models, I never look at a model's page now on their model website. I go straight to their Instagram account, because that's the most real version you're getting of them. It's the most recent pics. It's the most raw. You get to see a bit of their personality as well. So it's the same when it comes to a stylist account. Like your website, how often do you update your website? Maybe twice a year, four times if you're lucky. So your Instagram account, I would just think of it as an instant website.
Yeah. And then when you are on set and doing shoots, or like when you're prepping for shoots, how do you find inspiration? Or is there a time where you were like really lacking inspiration and like you did something to help you like get back to get the creative juices flowing again?
It really depends, because it depends on what the job brief is. Sometimes it can be as vague as we need a swimmer shoot, and you're like, oh, okay. So you literally come up with like six different mood boards of six totally different things based on different locations. Like, is it tropical? Is it pastels? Is it romantic? Is it vibrant? All those different things. You're trying to give them as much options as possible when you're pitching. I tend to look at a lot of different photographers' websites, a lot of different stylists' websites. There's a website called fashioneditorials.com, and there's another one called Fashion Gone Rogue. And those, basically, they're like curated websites with like the best photo shoots in the world for like the past 25 years. Mm-hmm. And like, but I don't necessarily look at the recent ones. I'll go back to like the ones from 10 years ago, and I'm looking, like sometimes I'll even like research a specific model. Mm-hmm. If I think maybe the model could be the kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. So it really depends on what the brief is, how and where I get that inspiration from. It also depends on the photographer that I'm working with, because different photographers have totally different vibes. I work a lot with a guy called Alex Hutchinson, and mm-hmm. he has a very kind of specific aesthetic. So I would never pitch a mood board if I was working with him that was like really flashy, done with a flash. Like, it's just not his style. Mm-hmm. He likes to kind of almost tell a story, and it's quite natural. He loves to use natural light if he can. So you have to almost take all of those things into consideration as well. So there's a lot of little things when it comes to mood boarding. But yeah, mainly websites is where I would get my inspiration from for photo shoots. And I would always take inspiration from like 10 different photo shoots to make one. You know what I mean? It's never, I would never be like, here's a photo shoot that I want to recreate, because like, that's just not creative. And you know, I've seen people do it before, but like, I would never feel satisfied with the shoot then, because I would feel like I'm just copycatting somebody else's work.
Yeah, for sure. Do you still test shoot, and do you think it's important to test?
Yes, I do. Some of my test shoots are my favorite, to be perfectly honest. We especially test when we go on location shoots, because what happens is, if we were going to Miami, which we did recently, but like, no, I'll give you the Morocco one, for example. So we went to Morocco last year to do a shoot for Primark. And the way the flights are from Dublin to Morocco is you have to go for 4 days, because it's like the flight is on a Thursday and it comes back on a Sunday. Or the flight is on a Sunday and it comes back on a Thursday. So there's only two flights a week. So we had to go for 4 days. And I was like, itchy fingers or whatever, like I need to do something. I can't just lie there and someday I'd be bored out of my tree. So myself and the photographer Alex agreed that we'd do the Primark shoot. We wanted to do it over 2 days because we wanted sunrise and sunset. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to just take our time or whatever, but we still knew we'd have a full day aside from our travel time to like do something. So we got a model for free. The only thing that we had to do was pay for her flights, which were nothing. It was like Ryanair anyway. So we had a model fly in. She just wanted to do a cool test shoot. And we just did this cool, fun test shoot. Like there was no obligations. There was no editor or client being like, well, I need to make sure of this, 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 and this. It was just us being as creative as we could possibly be, testing different lightings, just vibing off each other. Like it was just a really... I think you have to do those because you stay creative, you have fun, you get ideas for future shoots as well. And the beauty about doing a test shoot is any test shoot that I've done, yeah, I think every test shoot I've ever done has ended up landing in a magazine afterwards because it's the best work that you end up doing because it's the most free.
Yeah.
So when you have an editor a lot of the time almost micromanaging, you can sometimes come out feeling like the shoot's not completely you. Especially if they're on set, and I get it, they have a vision themselves, they're a magazine, but sometimes it does kind of hinder the final result. And then when you do these test shoots, you're just like, this is what I want, because every image is what you wanted then.
Yeah.
And every outfit is what you wanted, and every finished product is what you wanted. So the one that we did in Morocco, it landed in a UK magazine, and funnily enough then, due to this kind of weird circumstances at the moment, a lot of the magazines in Ireland are struggling to get shoots for their next issue because nobody can shoot. And I got an email from three different magazines going, any chance you have a photo shoot that we could use? And I would have, because we were meant to shoot in Miami, a test shoot, but we ended up having to fly home early because Alex had a family emergency. But for one of the magazines, I wrote back and I was like, even though the one from Morocco had been printed in a UK magazine, it had never been printed in an Irish magazine. I go, look, I have a shoot. I was like, it's a year old, so none of the products are available. But I think you'll really like the shoot. Mm-hmm. And I have a kind of alternative suggestion. Why don't you print it as an inspiration shoot? So print the entire shoot, like 8 to 10 pages, but explain that this is shot pre-season, so that the actual garments aren't available. But then do a shop the shoot page afterwards and do like where to get the closest thing, because the whole vibe of the shoot was just utility. So it was like, there was like a cream boiler suit. I mean, everyone has a cream boiler suit now. There was like a khaki green utility jacket. I was like, so you could do like, there were really kind of plain outfits. There was nothing in the shoot that you couldn't probably find a version of now. So I was like, you could just do a shop the shoot, do a list of like, you know, just the screen, the product shots on a page, where they can get a utility jacket, where they can get a boiler suit, instead of crediting the actual clothes of the shoot. And they were like, that's actually a really good idea. So now that shoot's going into the next issue of Irish Country. And I just thought, like, you were saying there, like, I was coming up with ways of trying to market things, but it was just another one. I was just kind of like, I'd love to see that in print here, because, well, people in the UK saw it, nobody here saw it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think we put maybe 2 pictures up on our social media, but like, the shoot never got seen. And it's one of my favourite ones, so I'm delighted that that's going to print now.
That's so good, and it just goes to show as well that if you are a young stylist and times like these happen and you're like, God, I can actually work now, but yeah, you've got all this work that's probably never been printed and it's time for your work to shine, essentially. Like, you can pitch these all to magazines, and like you said, you've obviously, there would have been a problem that the products were out, but you've had the initiative to turn around and say, but we could like curate a kind of what looks like this shoe.
Yeah.
It'd be great for young stylists to hear, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's not something that would often happen, but I think just given the current circumstances, I mean, I've seen, I think it was Zara.com. They've sent their product to their models to shoot their product to go on their website. Mm-hmm. And I saw that like Gigi Hadid did like a photo shoot for, I think it was Vogue Italia or one of the Vogues anyway, maybe Vogue Paris. She did an at-home photo shoot shot by herself. They just sent her the product. Mm-hmm. So I do think that like brands, if you can think of the most creative way right now to be a stylist, this could be your moment. Like if you can think of ways, I saw, I think with Brian Conway was shooting clothes on chairs with no model.
Yeah.
With his iPhone. and putting it up on a social media. And it's, I was just like, this is what people are looking for right now. Like magazines and brands, they're looking for people to market and I suppose showcase their product in a totally different way. So like even like the likes of the TV shows now, and I don't do them anymore, but like RLDM right now, they've been sending product to models and then models are modeling them at home the way they would on screen, which is mad when you think about it, but it's really incentive. And it's I suppose if there are young stylists out there thinking, okay, like I'm totally stuck now because I can't do any photo shoots, I'm sitting at home, now is the time to think about the most creative ways possible. Get in touch with the magazines, get in touch with TV shows, get in touch with, or whatever way you can, get your product and your shoots out there, because people are looking, like, and not even brands and editors, we as a community are looking to see things differently and to kind of be inspired, I think. So it's the perfect time for people that are creative to shine.
Yeah, for sure. And then how do you approach getting, because I know you said you've obviously tested a couple times and you still do, how do you approach getting them published then? Do you just literally reach out to magazines and the way you've said, like, sell the story, kind of come up with a story, or?
So for the test shoots, I would usually just send in the final product. So I would basically just email them. Now, obviously, now I have a relationship with the editors, so, you know, I would expect a response whether they want it or not. There was a stage, obviously, where I was cold emailing and I didn't really know the editors, and sometimes you wouldn't get a response and you're like, you can feel disheartened, you just have to keep trying because they get so many emails. But I would say you just send a PDF of your favorite images and you'd be like, look, I've done this test shoot. Here's a list of the products that I've used. Like, just give them the best names. And I'd love you to consider it for one of your upcoming issues. Obviously this is just a selection of my favorite images, but if you like to see, I can send you the full selection, you can make your own edit. That's kind of the way if you want to get a test shoot printed. Another way is just email the editors your test shoots and just be like, look, I know you don't take on test shoots because some of them don't, however, I wanted to show you a sample of my work. I would love the opportunity to pitch for upcoming editorials. If you think this is something, like if you think my style is something that would fit your magazine, I'd love to pitch in some ideas. And that's another thing, I suppose, pitching in ideas. Like, you can cold pitch. I would always make sure that you, I did have a very not nice experience very early on in my career where I pitched an idea and the magazine then went ahead and printed the exact same idea with another stylist and another team. And unfortunately, this kind of thing does happen and has happened. So I would always say, like, as much as possible, protect your ideas. I always put a little disclaimer at the end of my pitches just to say, like, this is my idea, like, you know, da da da. But I mean, we don't really have much legal standing on that. But even just having it in writing, I think is kind of enough to say, look, it's my idea. You know what I mean? But yeah, I feel like just constantly sending in your ideas, constantly sending in your test shoots, keep them informed. And if you're not getting responses, just keep sending, like, it's exactly what I did. I used to send in ideas all the time. And then eventually, U Magazine, I did a test shoot. One of the first, actually the first print I ever got in Ireland was for U Magazine, which doesn't exist anymore. And it was an awful shoot. It was a shoot inspired by Lady Gaga, who'd just come out at the time, and it was like, you know, the girl had like the blonde wig, it was like her first song, whatever Lady Gaga's first song was, and the embellished glasses, which I have here somewhere, and which I made, and it was just like, it was like how to get the Lady Gaga look. And I sent it in and the editor wrote back and she was like, this is so of the moment because everyone was obsessed with Lady Gaga. And she gave me like a 3-page spread, which isn't a lot, but like it was 3 pages like of a test shoot that I did. Like, and what I'd done with those clothes was, with at the time, I'd gone in and I'd bought everything with my dad's credit card and then returned everything because I couldn't borrow clothes. I wasn't an established stylist.
The stylist's blessing at the beginning.
It is. So, but that's exactly how I worked at the beginning. I used to buy things and then return them. Because, like, it's not like if you're testing, it's very hard because it's not like you can phone a store or boutique and go, I'm doing a test shoot. Because the whole point of stores lending you product is because they're getting something in exchange, which is they're getting the coverage. That's the only reason. It's like a, I suppose, like, works for them, works for you. Yeah, but if you're doing a test shoot, there's absolutely no, unless you establish a relationship with a boutique, perhaps, but there's, why would a brand give you something that's going to be out of their store for a couple of days and they're not able to sell it and they're not, you know, they're also not getting imagery out of it, unless you did an exchange and you're like, look, I'm doing a test shoot, I'll give you the images to use on your website, or you can have the images to use on your social media. That's probably a nice way to do it. But it's still a little bit tricky. So yeah, the way that I started off was dad's credit card, buy them, return them.
Yeah. And hey, you return them, it's fine. And it makes you learn how to keep clothes in a good state also.
Exactly, because that's a very important part of it. Like, you're borrowing product that has to be sold again. Mm-hmm. So you need to, like, one of the biggest things about being stylist is you have to look after that property. You can't be, like, it can't be lying on the floor. It can't have makeup on it. It can't have sweat stains. It can't smell. Like, all these things, like, that product is your responsibility. And I do remember I got an email from a young stylist years ago, and she was really upset because something had been stained and the shop was trying to charge her. And she phoned me, like, I didn't know her. She just got my number off my website. And she's like, look, I've been following you for years. And she's like, this is my first ever editorial photo shoot. And I just, the model stained it. So shouldn't the model have to pay for it? And I was like, unfortunately not. Like, you signed the product out. You are responsible for that product. And I was like, it's an expensive lesson to learn, but you'll never make that mistake again. Like, you should be the one putting a scarf over the model's head. You should be the one lifting the clothes off. You should be the one taking care of everything. And if there is any stains, you take it to be dry cleaned, if it's dry cleanable. If it's not, you let the store know. Like, there's so many different ways around it. But as a stylist, that, like, the product is, like, number one, basically.
It's your child.
Yes, it is your child. Exactly.
And then, has there been a moment or a particular shoe or day of work where you've been like, wow, this is why I want to work in fashion, or this is amazing, do you know?
I kind of feel like that every time I'm on a location shoot. That's where I get the biggest buzz. The kind of the studio shoots, it's almost like I could do it with my eyes closed. I don't, like, I still get a buzz off it. But the location shoots, there's so much hyperness around it, and like, I've been very lucky because it has brought me to some of the most beautiful places in the world. So, you know, the way that buzz you get when you're traveling, I feel like it's like double that, because I'm doing what I love, I'm creating beautiful imagery, and I'm in the most incredible place. And every time I do a location shoot, I really feel that. So I don't take it for granted at all. That's why I love being a stylist, but I do really love the shoots that I create abroad, because I do feel like they look totally different as well. And I feel like I'm creating something that nobody else has done. And I can't pinpoint one particular one. It's like, every time I do one, it kind of one-ups the one before that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's definitely the location shoots, because I just feel like that's when I'm like, this is what I'm meant to be doing.
So as a freelance stylist, obviously location can be quite expensive. So when you are doing location shoots, is it because you've got a client who has a big budget, or can you do location by yourself as well?
You can do location by yourself if you've, like, the best way to do that would be if you had a really good relationship and friendship with a photographer and a hair and makeup person, and you went on holidays together, and you make, you know what I mean? Especially at the beginning of my career, I used to invest back in my own. So I kind of saw it like an investment. Mm-hmm. The same way that you would buy your styling kit and you'd pay for your steamer and you'd pay for things like that. I was like, well, look, if I have to pay 100 quid for a flight and the client doesn't have the budget, but I'm getting paid for the shoot, so it's coming out of my fee, but it makes the shoot look better, then isn't it worth doing? Because that's going to impress other clients that will hire me for bigger budgets down the line. So I very much was of that mind that you can invest back in your own career the same way that you would spend on like PR and marketing. So I would see things like, look, if I have to pay for the flight myself, I'll pay for it. I wouldn't really mind it. And I did that quite a few times. Now, then what I would start to do is I started to kind of maybe get like 3 or 4 clients. And I'm like, would you like an abroad trip? And they'd be like, we don't have the budget. And I'm like, if I can split it between clients, could we make that work? So I was, but that was a lot of work because you're trying to produce 4 shoots abroad or whatever it is, but you're trying to split the cost of the airfare and the accommodation and the car hire. And sometimes you need permits. Like there's a lot that goes into those production shoots. But now I'm in a position where usually I'm going abroad for just one client because it's a bigger client with a bigger budget and they can encompass all of that themselves.
Yeah, for sure. And then I know you're obviously mainly based in Ireland, but I know you do work in London and stuff a lot. How do you get those abroad jobs? Obviously, I know, like you say, you reach out and stuff like that, but I understand that reaching out in Ireland can be quite different to reaching out maybe to people in London or...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like, so when I reach out to people in London, it's usually, I suppose, it's probably really only been in the last 4 years that I've been able to get like good clients in London, and I think that's because I'm established here. So a lot of the London brands now see Ireland as a really good market, whereas they probably wouldn't have years before that. And they need not even a face, they need somebody to help introduce them into the Irish market. So I kind of use that angle because I'm established. Like if I like one of my clients is Louis Vuitton, for example, and they only have one store in Dublin. It's in Brent Thomas, and they wanted to do a couple of like events. So I hosted those for them, or I hosted particular segments for them, but they only have UK press office. Sorry. Well, they have more than UK press office, but that would be our liaison place. So I would liaise directly with the London office, and I would go and have meetings with them in London, and then I'd host for them in Dublin. So I actually used Ireland to my advantage while getting those London clients because they actually want to sell here. They all want to have their brand here. They might not be here yet. They might see that the Irish market are buying from them online, so they want to open that up. So that was kind of my entry. Like I obviously like the fact that I think when I approach these brands, I'm like, okay, so I lived in London and I went to college in London, College of Fashion and blah, blah, blah. So there's that little intro as well, which I feel sometimes helps. But I'm over a lot. Like, so I do go to London Fashion Week and I would have like a lot of friends there. So every time I went over, I'd set up a meeting. So every time I was over, I'd set up a meeting to the point where it made sense for me to be over at least every 1 or 2 months. And I'd do like back-to-back meetings in a day, or I'd stay for 3 days and I'd break up my meetings. And I just kind of pinpoint the different brands that I wanted to work with. And I just emailed them. So a lot of the time it was cold emailing and just be like, look, I see that you have, you know, you sell in this boutique or you whatever. I was like, would you be interested in meeting up and just discussing about your brand and seeing if there's anything else that we can do in Ireland? And I would do it with that angle, but then often get things in London from that as well. Because like, I know it's a very heavy infiltrated industry in London, but sometimes they are looking for a little bit of fresh meat.
Yeah, for sure. It's really interesting as well because we do really have huge selling power here, and I think that's a bit underestimated, like maybe in the UK or whatever, but like we're shopaholics on this side.
Oh, like, yes. I used to do a lot with ASOS, and they were just like, the amount of stuff, like I think their consumer industry in Ireland is way bigger than England. Like we are crazy for ASOS. It's absolutely mental. But yeah, definitely, we're addicted to shopping online.
I'm sure you get like a million and one emails saying how to start out and can I assist you or blah, blah, blah. Is there, and I know a lot of people can email in the wrong way or the right way, or what do you think is like a rookie mistake that people make when they're trying to start out and how can they avoid that?
In terms of like emailing me, the worst... Well, I've got this a few times, is like the generic email where they forgot to change the name. I you'd be surprised how many times I've get an email like that, and it's like, and they say like, hi Sarah or whatever, I'm a huge fan of your work, I've been following your career for years, and like if that said hi Courtney, you'd be like, oh, this is so nice, whatever. But the fact that you know it's then generic and that they're just sending this to everybody, like it's just straight away discarded as in like, well, that's not authentic. I've had some really lovely emails then as well where people are like quoting things that I've said or talking about a particular shoot. Like I had one girl and I thought it was just so I suppose inventive is probably better. She dissected one of my shoots. And she basically was like, I loved the way you put this with this. And she's like, I love the story that it told. And she kind of just, she almost dissected the suit in the way, shoot in the way that she
perceived
it. Yeah, perceived it. And I just was like I actually like sat back and was like, I've never got an email like that. And like straight away I met with her for a coffee because I was like, that's all she wanted. She just wanted a bit of time. She's like, I'd love to meet you for a coffee for a little bit of like insight into the industry. And I have no problem giving somebody that time if they're looking for that. And yeah, she was so nice, but it was just like, I like emails like that. I like really personal ones. If that's what you're looking for, if you want to have a chat with me, if you're sending me a generic email and you're expecting me to spend my time giving you advice, I think that's a little bit cheeky.
When you've spent 5 minutes sending it out to 70 people, do you know what I mean? Yeah.
Exactly. I think that would definitely be probably the worst rookie mistake. Yeah, that's probably the main one, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. And then I've been following your Closet Confidential series. Loving it. I'm so nosy. I'm obsessed. I'm like, show me.
We all are. The idea for this, I've had this idea for like probably a year and a half, and it was actually pitched as a TV show. And it never really came to fruition. It was then meant to go as an online show, and it had a sponsor and everything, and we were meant to start filming this season. And then obviously all this happened, and obviously people's budgets were cut and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I kind of was just like, do you know what? I don't want to sit in this any longer. I've been sitting on this idea. What's going to happen is somebody else is going to come up with it. And I was like, I'm just going to do it as a live from my closet to their closet. I was like, this is the kind of content that I would want to watch right now. So I feel like other people will want to watch it. We're all nosy. We love clothes. I was like, it's kind of meshing those together. And for me, it's a bit of escapism. So like it's for me during this time, being freelance is quite difficult because I like having a schedule. I like, this is what I do at different points during the day. Mm-hmm. So for me having this, it means that on a Monday, Wednesday and Friday, I have a purpose at 5 o'clock, which means that I have to do my hair and makeup on a Monday, Wednesday and a Friday, and I have to put on a nice outfit, and it makes me feel good for the day. Yeah. So it really just kind of, it's just giving me a bit of structure. It's giving me a bit of escapism, and I know it's giving other people that escapism as well. And I get to do something that I'm passionate about and that I've been talking about for ages. And I feel like that the response has been huge. Like the response, I'm actually quite overwhelmed with how many people have been tuning in and are into it. So I feel like it is something that could, again, like once this is all over, there's nothing to say that it can't develop again into a TV format or an online format, where I'm in the person's house with them and we're trying on the clothes and it's a bit more collaborative in that way. But I feel like this as a teaser is quite nice and it's quite fun and we have a glass of wine and all that.
Especially because it builds up the momentum then, so you can probably get bigger budgets when it does go on, be like, yeah, as many people are interested, like let's really do it.
Yeah, exactly. And like you said, it's building up that kind of excitement about it. And it's funny because when you're pitching things, a little bit like a photo shoot, when you're pitching things on a mood board, you're often talking to somebody that works from a marketing department. They might not be very creative. They might not be able to visualize what you're visualizing.
Yeah.
So when I'm able to physically show them video footage of like, this is what it's going to be like, but obviously slightly different because we'll be with each other and be filmed professionally, all that sort of stuff, but they can kind of see the vibe, then it's much easier to pitch it. And it's kind of the same. Sometimes what happens is when you're pitching photo shoots, you're pitching to somebody that's not really from the creative side of the industry. They might be like, if it's an editor, they could have come from a journalism background. They might not have ever been on set before. Mm-hmm. So you're trying to pitch to them, like, here's this mood board with like 20 different images on them, and they don't really get it. So you have to almost explain. Sometimes you have to talk them through, like, you're like, this isn't exactly what it's going to turn out. Like, this is what we call an inspiration board. Yeah. So you almost have to break it down for them. Sometimes I'm like, one page, like, this is our lighting inspiration. On another page, like, this is our makeup inspiration. On another page, it's like, this is our location inspiration, or this is our exact location. So you really have to, it depends on the client. Some clients will get a one page PDF and it's like, here's the vibe. And they're like, yeah, I love it, go with it. And then other clients, you're like, here's a 10-page PDF and everything's broken down because I know how finicky you are and that you're going to be like, huh? So that's a good one, I suppose, for people to realize, is that when you're pitching, people might not be thinking the same thing, because at the end of the day, the client, when you bring them the finished product, they need to be able to go, this mood board went to this, and there has to be something that's blending those together. It can't be, here's the mood board and here's a totally different shoot that we had, looks nothing like the mood board. Mm-hmm. So that's why that one can be quite funny. Some of the clients, you need to break it down for them so they understand, because they could come back with the one page mood board and go, but like, this girl has curly hair, and I'm like, yeah, but that's not her hair reference, it was just a vibe, you know what I mean? So that's a funny one. I definitely feel like at the very beginning, you need to be as specific as possible.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And then just to wrap it up then, what would your advice be to stylists starting out or someone looking to follow the same career path?
Go for it. Grind, and don't let, I mean, just work your arses off. Don't let anybody kind of make you stop. I feel like it is, it's funny. I feel like it's one of those careers, like, anyone that assisted me, only one of them's actually still a stylist. The rest of them still work in fashion, but they went off in different directions.
Figuring out what you want, kind of, as well.
Yeah, you might think you want styling, but you might just want to work in the fashion industry. Because although I keep going on about how amazing it is, like, it's amazing because it's my vocation and I'm obsessed with it and I love what I do. But I also wanted to be a fashion designer before all this started out. So, like, you might find a different niche within the industry that you didn't realize. But I would say, for those of you that have dreamed of becoming a stylist, just stick with it. Keep testing, test, and keep, like, emailing and messaging people and promoting your work. I think that's really all you can do at this stage, and just be as creative as you can possibly be.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Really been a dream to listen to your story, and I think it'll be really educational for tastemakers and anybody that will hopefully listen. I'd just like to say a huge thank you to Courtney again for sharing her insight with us. I've loved hearing it, and I'm sure you have too. If you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe, give us a rating, and leave a review. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you next week.